Welcome. Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. You can join the conversation, 504-260-0995, or send us an email, text, or connect, stream. Use the Winning at Life app.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. There's another way you can listen. You can come to this window right here and get your ear up real close. You can probably hear most of the show. But if you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, that app will get you in touch with us in a multitude of ways. So go ahead and download that on your phone. I have some comment cards here from Gregory Ricks live event. But if you want to hear Gregory answer other people's questions, that's fine. But if you need your own question answered, pick up that phone, 504-260-0995. Leafing through these comment cards before the show, Gregory. I think one thing we need to cover here is what are the rules as far as maximizing Social Security? I get a lot of that. And then I imagine we're going to have to delve into Social Security widows, you know, the survivor's benefits and the ex-spouses and all those little tangents as well. But Social Security, again, a big topic at your live event.
Yes, always a lot of questions. And we routinely, you know, it's commonplace to have callers and people email and text the show about it as well. How to max core thing about maximizing Social Security. First off, you're building Social Security credits by your taxable earned income that's on that W-2, or if you're a self-employed business person, Schedule C, that's going to go on the Schedule C form regarding your business. If you're a business owner and paying yourself a salary in the business, it's going to get picked up that way. But your earnings, maximizing your earnings, more you earn, the more is being credited to that. And then the key thing about growing it is your FRA is 100% of your insurance benefit, meaning the most you can get for Social Security based upon that age. If you started early, you're being discounted. You know, it's not, well, I'm 62, I can turn it on. Yeah, that's the early period, and it's greatly discounted by like about 30% reduction to turn it on at 62 versus full retirement age. And then when you reach full retirement age, if you wait on an annual basis, deferring to up to age 70, you increase it by 8% a year. Now, it's not an actual annual increase. You're actually credited those increase each month you defer, but it's a 8% increase on an annual basis. And then that growth is going to stop at age 70. That's all there's going to be. Now, if you're still working, you could still see some increases, but you're really not growing that benefit. There's no reason to defer. So you should be turning it on, or you're just leaving money at the U.S. Treasury.
Yeah, that's the end of the road, age 70. If you just need to know where that mile marker is at the end of the map, right there. And yeah, you could keep working. You could raise your benefit just a little bit, but it's far outshone by the number of checks you miss and the amount there. So that's always a good stopping point. If you're past 70 and you hadn't turned it on, you probably need to turn it on. Okay, so it gets a little squirrely here. Once nature kicks in and one of the partners in the marriage passes away, there's also additional complications that are thrown in there from, you know, just the modern way we do things. There's a lot of blended families out there. So sometimes there's an ex-spouse or two ex-spouses, and that's quite commonplace. And then you can mix them both. What if you have an ex-spouse that you were married to for 10 years, but now you're divorced and he's married someone else, but then he passed away? Can you still draw on his record? What if you're remarried? What if you get a divorce? It's thousands of different scenarios to juggle. And that's why we always get the questions on the cards. Everyone's situation seems to be a little different almost. But I just wanted to have a little fun here, because initial jobless claims were the top story. The news was amazingly positive. Initial jobless claims just set a 50-year low. And if you're thinking, wait a second, is this a replay? Is this a rerun? Because didn't it just set that record, like a 50-year low record? Okay, so you're not crazy. You have heard a previous show where we just said, yeah, initial jobless claims broke a 50-year record. But here I am again, a week later, saying just about the exact same thing. Initial jobless claims plunge even more to an even lower low, but it really just goes back about the record goes back a couple months, 50 years ago. So again, initial jobless claims are down to the lowest levels they have been since even earlier than we previously reported in 1969. So that's where we're at with that. Some history was made. And I was kind of giggling here because, you know, 1969, let's just talk about what was going on in 1969. Greg, we like to play the inflation game. We'll do a little bit of that. But first off, that was the year we landed on the moon. This is the lowest unemployment has been in the United States since before we put someone on the moon. See, there's a little perspective there. It was also about this time when we had initial jobless claims this low that the population of America was about 100 million less than it is now. And we're not talking about this is a record by proportion. This is a record by nominal number. The price of gas, the average price of gas in 1969, 35 cents. If that sounds awfully low, actually, if you adjusted the price for inflation, it would be $2.26. So it's kind of on par with where it is now if we had a steady dollar. Yeah, but 1969, what in Woodstock in 1969? This is the fewest initial unemployment claims, new unemployment claims we've had since before Woodstock. There's my perspective. If there's 1,000 times I need to say this more, I'll do it. This is the greatest underreported story of the last 2 years, and that's the booming economy and the great situation American workers are living under. We still have wage growth that is outpacing where it's been for over a decade. We have the lowest unemployment records being set all over the place, fewest layoffs, fewest unemployment claims. I mean, there's a lot of good news here in the economy.
So back to 1969, average price of a home, $15,550.
Oh my God.
New car, $3,200. Toyota Corona.
Not a Corolla. This is a Corona.
Corona. Toyota
Corona. They made beer.
$1,900 for one of those.
Do we have to do the inflation adjuster though?
Let's see. Where am I at here on that? It said inflation rate was 5.46% then. Yeah, average cost of a new house, like I said, was a little over $15,000.
Okay. So if it was in 1969, I got an inflation calculator over here if you want me to use it.
Average income that year, $8,500.
$8,500?
Mm-hmm.
Put that one in.
And you had the Apollo 10 mission, as you mentioned.
I think we had three Apollos that year. They went to the moon in August, and I think they went back. All right, so the income one, $8,500, translates to $59,000 a year, which isn't too far off from where we are now. What was was the Corona? Was that $1,900? Toyota Corona would be $13,160 today. Oh, that was a deal.
Yeah, you had on July 16th, Apollo 11 launched from Kennedy Space Center, carrying Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, and Buzz Aldrin. He was the lunar module pilot.
The number one song was Crimson and Clover from Tommy Rowe. Wasn't that Tommy James and the Shondell? It says Tommy Rowe over here. Oh, well. So how long can this last, Gregory? It's amazing because what we had last week was the record that was at 197,000. That one actually got revised down a little bit. So this is the second consecutive week that we've had under 200,000 new unemployment claims, initial jobless claims. And that hasn't happened since September of 1969, when we had the 2 months in a row.
Booyah!
So we have a sharp rebound in payrolls going on as well. I think what I'm really getting into is when you look at what the stock market's been doing and they're tickling new highs for 2019. In fact, I think a couple of them hit it this today, that the Fed's going to be hard-pressed to not raise rates for the rest of the year, I think. This is so much good news. They're going to have to debate whether or not they're going to quit the quantitative tightening and maybe even put back on the table clocking up that federal funds rate again. And I think that's a good sign.
Repeat that.
We have so much good economic news. The Fed may actually have to at least start talking about raising the rate before the end of the year, and they might actually do it.
Well, you know, that's what my take is. I stated it last night that I think we get a rate increase on the back end of this year. Again, they might stop the unwinding of the balance sheet, which gives them room to do that again. You know, it's probably the problem is both happening at once. This unwinding of the balance sheet's been overdue but delayed and is a problem, pulling all that money back out the system. But the economy's good. I expect growth to continue. I expect earnings to be good. The job numbers are going to stay good. And I think rate increases are going to be talked about again.
If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome back. Winning at Life. Live Financial Talk Radio. Well, I know one thing. I can prove I'm doing this show tonight. I can prove I did the show last night.
Are you saying this broadcast completely exonerates you?
Yeah. From what?
Could be anything. I don't know. Just throwing hypothetically speaking out there.
Yeah, you can't say tomorrow that I was in Omaha, Nebraska. I can be exonerated from it.
Yeah, right. During this time right
during
now.
During this time. Otherwise, and then, of course, it'd take a number of feats to have been there today and be here.
Yeah, yeah.
But then somebody could say, well, you know, you could have done the broadcast from Omaha.
Yeah,
you I could have, but I do have a receipt from where I had dinner tonight. Wouldn't that validate that I was in the area where my studio was?
Well, you're a smart enough guy that you can have some guy go pick up a receipt for you. Okay. Is there any pictures of it?
See,
on Facebook?
Yeah, well.
Is there a picture of you at the restaurant?
Well, I'm, what? So Facebook Live and Periscope could be picking up a replica of this in Omaha?
Well, they're picking up our replica of the studio that we built in Omaha. It just happens to look the same, but we did that on purpose, and I'm up here too with you. That's how the Facebook Live thing works.
I guess you can turn about anything into something.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of alluding to some news today.
That's what the news sounded like.
Everybody is just trying to still twist. There has to be a way that he did it and got over on everybody. You know, how about he didn't do anything? Just to be clear, Winning at Life, Live Financial Talk Radio. I'm Gregory Ricks, your host. That's James Parker. And yeah, that is the big news story today. But, you know, one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, kind of saying, you know, I saw one of the headlines is how, you know, they kind of just like struggled with Trump's effort to end the investigation of, you know, he ordered people to fire Mueller and stuff like that. But I'm just taking, look, take it from the president's situation. He pulled off, probably did the biggest feat of his life. Historically, one of the biggest feats in politics in general. He,
yep,
you know, real estate mogul, TV personality, has enough money to fly around and pay all the bills to win the presidential election, and got enough people to believe in him that he could get the job done. He gets in office and all of a sudden this paperwork showed collusion, and he figures out, yeah, I've been under surveillance. When he kind of mentioned, everybody thought, what are you, a crackpot? What are you talking about? No, he's actually being surveilled there. And all this conspiracy and everything that he did this and he did that, people coming out the woodwork on a number of things. And if you're in that position, and then you've gotten to see the Democrats are after me, now they've got this Mueller guy, he's a Democrat, he's got all these FBI people, and they're the ones that created this fake report. From that standpoint, he could well, you know, the fix is in to get me out of here. And he knows he didn't do anything wrong, but he's like this being real. So from that standpoint, and your top executive office in the country, do I have any say in this? Can I just shut this down, put a stop to this, all this BS? I just see it from that standpoint is like, I've got to let this play out. I didn't do anything. All the fake news and everybody's making up stuff. And we've heard it on the news. It's more, oh, a rumor, and then they just run with it that it is fact. And so I could see that, like, you know, can we shut this down? Hey, you over there, you in that big job, shut him down. You know, I could see that.
I would have gone a little more crazy than he did. And the breaking point, I know, for me would have been in December, more than 2 years after the election. He has to turn on Saturday Night Live, and they're singing, and they wrote and sang a Mueller Christmas carol about the joy Mueller is going to bring when he gets Trump kicked out of office. And it's been 2 years of this garbage, and I would have gone nuts. I would have gone absolutely insane. I couldn't have handled it. Because, look, if you're innocent, how nuts does that drive you? And building on what I said in the last segment, they spent more time talking about a story that wasn't even true than they did talking about the economy, things that really affect your wallet, your pocketbook, your ability to put food on table for your kids, save for retirement.
The investigation on something that was started by falsified documents, so none of it was true. And nobody, even if you can say, well, he tried to squash the investigation. Okay. Yeah. The false investigation, he tried to squash it. Yeah. So what does that mean? Yeah. If somebody's lying about you and telling stories and lying about you and it's going to hurt you, wouldn't you like to stop it at the core? And everybody would say yes. Oh, no. I would just let them keep doing it. Really? No, you wouldn't.
The sad part is the media spent more time on that story in the last 2 years than any other single story. So the plurality of their time was spent on a hoax.
Yeah. So I wonder if anybody's going to answer for the hoax. And that might be the next story.
That's what I like about doing the show, because what was the headline on this show? Initial jobless claims reach a 50-year low. They're setting records. That's something that affects the guy listening right now. It affects you and me. I mean, it affects you because you're having a hard time hiring people, and we're in a growing phase over here. But this story that dominated the headlines for the last 2 years affects nothing. It affects nothing for you and your personal life or your job or your career or anyone in the world, because it was all fairy dust. I mean, really, the only people affected is, what, Paul Manafort and I guess Roger Stone and a couple of those people, maybe Michael Cohen. So I wish they would just drop it and they would go back to reporting on stories that actually affect the people that they're talking to.
Yeah, instead of innuendos or trying to play out something that they think might could possibly have happened or might be true. Let's just start dealing with the facts again. That would be helpful.
Hey, Gregory, I found a rule of thumb online. I want to run it by you. These are just general milestones that are recommended if you're asking how much money should I have saved up by the time I'm 30, by the time I'm 40, 50, 60. This actually seems like kind of a reasonable rule of thumb. By age 30, you should have 100% of your current salary already saved up in your retirement savings. By age 40, you should have 3 times your current salary. Age 50, 6 times your current salary. And age 60, 8 times your current salary. Now, it's pretty cool. You'll notice that they expect you to accelerate your savings quite a bit between age 40 and 50. Anecdotally speaking, I haven't done the numbers on this, but I think I've kind of noticed that's when a lot of people really get serious about saving for retirement, is between 40 to 50. A lot of another serious group between 50 to 60, but that also kind of coincides with your maximum earning potential.
And getting the kids off the payroll.
Is that what it is?
That's a combination. Oh, man, maximizing earning potential in that period, probably your best period. Still, say from 40 to 60 should be your max years. But, you know, if you're having the kids, say in the early 20s, then, yeah, they're coming off the payroll.
Smart people
at that time, so freeing up more money. And I have a lot of discussions like that where we've talked with families and they're kind of saying, yeah, you know, we've got one more year of college, or, you know, we've got 2 about to finish, and now we can really start saving some money. Yeah, very impactful.
So is this a pretty reasonable rule of thumb here? Because the questionable one I have is, at age 60, you should have 8 times your current salary. And that kind of sounds like by the time you get to whatever your retirement age, you may get up to 9 or 10 times your current salary when you actually push the button. That sound about right? 10 times your current salary, should that get it done in retirement? That sounds a little low. You have your math face on right now. When your eyes look up and to the left, you're doing math.
Well, just put that number out there. 10 times at what age now? What? At retirement?
At retirement. It says at age 60, you should have 8 times your current salary.
Well, if your salary is 50K, that's saying you should have 500,000 10 times.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's supposed to generate enough income to do what? Replace half of your salary?
This is
because, once again, let's just talk about the math here. 5% income stream off 500,000 is 25,000. That's not getting you 50,000. You know, I'm thinking you need 20 times your salary saved is kind of where you need to be. Now, once again, then you could back it back down. If you're getting Social Security benefits, the spouses, you get a little pension there, you know, a little real estate income. Then you can start backing it off. But otherwise, you need to shoot for 20 times.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Whatever it is you got to give. Hey, welcome. Yeah, I'm Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. This is The Money Show. How you doing? Kiss. You got a money question? 504-260-0995. Or you can give us a call or text from the front screen of the Winning at Life app. All right, so let's talk about the Social Security rules. We're going over the comment cards from a recent live event. And that's always a big chunk of the questions. And we know why. It's because there's few other places to get answers for your Social Security questions. And you're a very public guy with the radio show on 6 days a week. And we talk about this all the time. So people just look to you for these answers. So give the new guy here a rundown on how that works.
Okay, regarding widow or widower benefits, there's about 5 million widows and widowers receiving monthly Social Security benefits based on their deceased spouse's earnings record. For many of those survivors, particularly aged women, those benefits are keeping them out of poverty. And you know what? Most of the women in retirement that have become impoverished were not in poverty when their spouse died.
That number is actually 80% last time we checked it out.
Yeah. Okay. Reduced benefits as early as age 60 or full benefits at full retirement age or older. So if widowers or widows qualify for retirement benefit on their own record, they can switch to their own retirement benefit as early as age 62. So they can start with the deceased worker's record and then switch to their benefits anytime later up to age 70. Benefits can also be turned on as early as age 50 if they're disabled and their disability started before or within 7 years of the worker's death. So if a widow or widower who's caring for your children receives Social Security benefits, they're still eligible if their disability starts before those payments end or within 7 years after they end. There's more benefits at any age. If they've not remarried or if they take care of your child who is under age 16 or disabled and receives benefits on your record. So if a widow or widower remarries after they reach age 60, age 50, if disabled, the remarriage will not affect their eligibility for survivor benefits. How about for surviving divorce spouse? If you have a surviving divorce spouse, they could get the same benefits as your widow or widower, provided that your marriage lasted, everybody that listens knows this, it's 10 years or more. It's that key thing, 10 years for that surviving divorced spouse can draw off your benefit and as your widow or widower. And here's the thing about, well, how do? They split it? No, they don't even have to know about the other. And there's no discount. You could have multiple of them. And they all would receive the same benefit as if there was just your widow. So if your surviving divorce spouse qualifies for retirement benefits on their own record, they can switch to their own record benefit once again as early as age 62. Benefits paid to surviving divorce spouses won't affect the benefit amounts of your other survivors. As I mentioned, they will receive based on your earnings record. So if your surviving divorce spouse remarries after they reach age 60, once again, age 50, if disabled, the remarriage will not affect their eligibility for survivor's benefits. If your former spouse is caring for your child who is under age 16 or disabled and gets benefits on your record, they will not have to meet the length of marriage rule. The child must be your natural or legally adopted child. So there's all kind of little twists and turns. Some of it's a little repetitive, but then you get the little twists and turns that, oh, if they're taking care of your child, then the minimum does not meet that.
Then you don't have to be married for 10 years. Okay.
No. So once again, if they qualify for benefits as a surviving divorced mother or father who's caring for your child, their benefits may affect the amount of benefits other survivors will receive based on your earnings record. May affect, because, you know, there is that family maximum also on Social Security benefits while living as well. So unmarried children who are under 18 up to age 19, if attending elementary or secondary school full time.
What's wrong with that?
It's just the up to age 19, if attending elementary, they're just grouping all together. I see.
Yeah. There's an 18-year-old. He's just having a little trouble with the math. That's all.
Can be eligible to receive Social Security benefits when you die. So unmarried children going to school, and your child can get benefits at any age if they are disabled before age 22 and remain disabled. So besides your natural children, your stepchildren, grandchildren, step-grandchildren, or adopted children may receive benefits under certain circumstances. You want to know about your parents?
I'm interested in step-grandchildren.
You must be providing at least half your parent's support, and your parent must not be eligible to receive a retirement benefit that is higher than the benefit that could be paid on your record. Generally, your parent also must not have married after your death. However, there are some exceptions. So, and in addition to your natural parent, your step parent or adoptive parent may receive benefits if they became your parent before you were age 16. So if your parents depended upon you, there could be some benefits there as well.
That has to be rare, but it probably exists somewhere.
Okay, well, let's continue. So there's examples of monthly benefit payments. Widow or widower, full retirement age or older, 100% of your benefit amount is what they could receive. Widow or widower, age 60 to full retirement age, that's range of 71.5% to 99% of your basic amount. Disabled.
Wait, is full retirement age for widows 62?
No.
60 is your regular FRA?
It's essentially your FRA. There's a few variances in there, but they're only months of differences. So one way to simply understand it is just kind of judge it based upon your own FRA. There in that case, disabled widow or widower age 50 through 59, 71% of the benefit. So widow or widower, any age caring for your child under age 16, 75% of your benefit they could receive. A child under age 18, once again, 19, if still in school or disabled, 75% of your benefits. And dependent parents 62 or older, one surviving parent could get up to 82.5% of your benefit. Two surviving parents, 75% each.
Now that's interesting.
Well, if remember going back, I talked about it a few minutes ago, if they're reliant upon you and you die,
and their Social Security check is smaller than 82% of yours.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, that I must say, we haven't had a caller in that situation ever on the show.
No, I don't recall ever getting a question. Well, what about my parents if something happened to me?
Knock on zinc.
Now, you know, there's situations out there that goes on. Parents are needing help and the child or children help them a good bit. So I'm sure there's some of those situations out there. We've just never seen it come across. So once again, family maximum amount. There's a limit to the amount that the family members can receive each month. The limit varies, but is generally equal to between 150 and 180% of the basic benefit amount. If the sum of the benefits payable to the family members is greater than this limit, the benefits will be reduced proportionately. Any benefits paid to a surviving divorced spouse based on disability or age won't count toward this maximum benefit. So there's the cap on family members drawing on the benefit.
Yeah. Oh, is that all? All right. If you have any questions on that, if you want to know.
No cap on the spouses, the surviving divorced spouses or anything.
If you have any questions about this, if you want to know how your situation is going to play out, call Gregory 504-260-0995. Coming up next, we'll talk about gap insurance for Medicare. I'm James Parker. We are Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. What's up? This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, the Money Show. How you doing? Gregory Ricks across the table from me now, rifling through papers. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you want to come on board and have a chat with us real quick, come on. 504-260-0995. You need some help? Let's get you some help. Yeah, so we're going to go dive back into the comment cards here from a recent episode of Winning It Life, a recent Gregory Ricks live event. And that's what happens. We're going to start talking about our next couple of events that are coming up in May. And one thing that you should know is when you walk in, you get a little piece of paper that says, what's your primary concerns? And it's anonymous, so you don't have to put your name on it. I mean, I guess you could, but nobody. I guess this person did. So we'll cover some of the questions that were asked at the live event on Tuesday after we talked to Emily in New Orleans. You're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Yes. Mr. Ricks?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. I was just listening to your show as I do every night and every Sunday. My ex-husband and I were married over 12 years, and I drew early Social Security at 62 and received my Social Security. I was due, but I said I was also eligible to receive some of his Social Security. He's still working. I don't know if he's drawing early retirement. I don't think so. But then I got remarried a year later. Am I eligible to still receive ex-husband Social Security, or am I not?
See, if a widow or widower remarries after they reach age 60, the remarriage will not affect their eligibility for survivor's benefits.
Oh, okay. It's just widow or widower. Okay, because he is still alive, so I'm not eligible to receive his any longer. I would receive my present husband's, right?
Yes.
Okay, because they're going to deduct so much. I owe them a couple of $1,000 because I didn't report that I remarried, because one representative told me, no, I just would draw the husband who earned the most, and I assumed it was my ex-husband. I don't know. But anyway, they're going to draw a certain amount out of my Social Security check instead of making me pay it all at once.
Yeah, you have to port those changes
so,
like
it
that.
It would have to definitely be a... I would have to have been a widow.
Right.
Okay.
In that case, yeah, he would have had to pass away, and then you would not have been denied that, would not have had to make that change.
Right. Okay, thank you very much, and I enjoy your show. Very informative.
Oh, thank you so much for listening and being a part of the Winning at Life Nation.
Yeah, if you're going to be that nice, call back anytime. So back to the comment cards. What's your primary concern at the event? This fellow wrote, Medicare and gap insurance, any best choices? And I think one thing we've learned is people are surprised at the amount of stuff Medicare doesn't cover. And the whole gap insurance seems to creep up on a lot of people when they get to that phase in life. So good for him for getting ahead of it. But where do you stand on that one, Medicare and gap coverage?
Well, gap coverage is to fill in the parts that Medicare does not pay for it. It is private health insurance that helps supplement original Medicare. This means it helps pay for some of the health care costs that Medicare doesn't cover, like co-payments, co-insurance, and deductibles. And basically, it defines those are gaps in coverages. Now, there's 8 things to know regarding Medigap policies. You must have Medicare Part A and B. Medigap policy is different from a Medicare Advantage plan. Those plans are ways to get Medicare benefits, while a Medigap policy only supplements your original Medicare benefits. You pay the private insurance company a monthly premium for your Medigap policy. You pay this monthly premium in addition to the monthly Part B premium that you pay to Medicare. The gap policy only covers one person. If you and your spouse both want Medigap coverage, you'll each have to buy separate policies. You can buy Medigap policy from any insurance company that's licensed in your state to sell one. Any standardized Medigap policy is guaranteed renewable even if you have health problems. This means the insurance company can't cancel your gap policy as long as you pay the premium. Some Medigap policies sold in the past cover prescription drugs, but Medigap policy sold after January 1 of 2006 aren't allowed to include prescription drug coverage. And number 8, it's illegal for anyone to sell you a Medigap policy if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, unless you switch back to your original Medicare. You kind of look at, just kind of go through a couple parts there, like A, B, C. C really combines together the A and B and C to kind of give you whole coverage there. D is your prescription. Then you have F, and then you also have a version of F that's high deductible, and there's actually more. You've got G and N. So there's a lot of different coverage variations for gap coverage.
How strongly do you recommend someone have Medigap coverage? Is that a necessity?
I think everybody, whether you're using Advantage or gap coverage, it depends on the type of coverage you want, the coverages, and how much flexibility do you want in there. You got to look at, if you use an Advantage plan, basically it's going to be them managing your care and expenditures, and their objective there is to help control costs. And maybe, you know, then you've got to see the doctors on that list, and they have already pre-agreed deals with them. So there's more controls in place to keep costs down.
David Lafitte, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, David?
My mom is 84, and she moved in with us, and she got their Social Security every month. And my dad died back in 01. He had married for a couple of years and then divorced. And I'm wondering if my mother would qualify for both plans and how I would find out, because she, like I said, we moved her in with us. We're trying to get information out of her about that. She doesn't really understand anymore.
Okay. Run the question you're looking answered again.
Is if my mother, she's receiving Social Security right now.
Okay.
Okay. But I don't know if she ever filed to get my dad Social Security. Is she entitled to get both? If my
she
dad
cannot
dead?
Get both. But if his benefit was larger, she could draw more if he's deceased. Otherwise, if, you know, in the living, like we had the caller earlier regarding that, that's a spousal benefit from a living ex. But if he's deceased, she could be eligible to draw his benefit or get the, technically they give her the increase of the difference there, but she can't draw 2 checks.
Okay, all right, because she was probably making more than he was. She was a doctor before she retired.
Yeah, she's the one getting the money.
Okie doke. All right, yeah. Thanks so much. I do love y'all's show, man.
Hey, Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
David and Lafitte.
Well, it's a polite day, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. If you have a financial situation,
hey, I know tomorrow's Good Friday. It's Easter weekend. Everybody should be polite, a little extra nice. This is just a good time to reflect and once again be thankful for
all right.
what we have.
If you need any more help, you're gonna have to call Gregory at his day job. That's gonna be your next chance, or you can float him a text message right now through the app. I'm trying to get people into the habit. If it's not the show's not on and they have a question, they could just text you from the front screen of the Winning at Life app.
You know, these questions and some of what we've covered tonight in the guided planning system process, it's our process that we go through with clients. Just like when they come in for a visit, the fact finder is a 15-page document that we're kind of going through and filling out information to find out what's going on. Like tonight, we've talked about healthcare planning, the Medicare, and a lot of Social Security questions, which fall under income planning. If you would like to find out more about our process or to start the process of going through this, give my office a call, 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com.
Your home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker, and we are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.